In the heat of a July morning, a front porch becomes a repair shop. Somebody's grandfather sits with a tube of rubber cement. A bike tire gets patched. The old washing machine is coaxed back to life with a pair of needle-nosed pliers and a neighbor's steady hands. You can hear the wrench click, a kettle hiss from next door, and an occasional laugh as someone hands over a cup of coffee. That kind of morning used to be ordinary, and it kept households afloat long before planned obsolescence and disposable culture took over. Good evening, and welcome to Financial Time Machine. I'm Megan Thomas. Tonight, we're stepping back into another chapter of everyday American life, exploring the money, culture, habits, and quiet routines that shaped previous generations. From grocery stores and family dinners, to old advertisements, retirement dreams, and the way people once thought about debt, security, and success, this podcast is a journey through the forgotten rhythms of American life. Somewhere between nostalgia and history, there's usually a lesson. So settle in, slow down for a little while, and let's take a trip back in time. This is Financial Time Machine. Tonight's story is about the repair circle, the informal neighborhood systems of skill sharing, bartered labor, and do-it-yourself pride that kept families' things working decade after decade. We'll look at how these practices developed, how they shaped daily life, and what their quiet economics can teach us now. Let's start by stepping back to where the habit of fixing things began to feel like common sense.
Section 1. Historical context. After World War II, American households acquired more appliances than any previous generation and were part of the neighborhood economy. Fixing a broken appliance wasn't just cheaper. It kept a family's weekly budget intact during times when credit wasn't as pervasive and when a replacement could mean a real financial sacrifice. Economically, repair made sense because the cost of labor could be offset by bartering or a neighborly favor. Socially, asking for help meant participating in a mutual economy. You'd lend a wrench this week, and someone would tend to your roof the next.
There was also a different relationship to ownership. Things were expected to last. Manufacturers often provided accessible parts and repair manuals. Local craftsmen thrived, and a culture of reuse persisted because it had to. Wartime salvage drives and the mental habit of conserving spilled over into peacetime household practice. Even as convenience grew, think prepackaged goods and later mass-produced electronics, whole neighborhoods retained a do-it-yourself ethic that treated brokenness as fixable rather than disposable. That ethos shaped budgets as much as it shaped identities. Being handy was a form of household insurance.
Section 2. Cultural habits and the mechanics of neighborly repair. In many towns, tools were communal. A heavy chest of tools might sit in a shed, and neighbors knew who to call for what. Mr. Halverson could tune any radio. Mrs. Alvarez darned socks like new. The young men on the block knew how to sort a carburetor. Trades were gendered and generational, but knowledge crossed boundaries too. A teenage girl could be the best seamstress on the block and the unofficial bike mechanic for half the neighborhood.
Repair bees were common, an afternoon where neighbors gathered to help fix a few things, patch a roof, mend screens, or rewire a porch light. Labor was exchanged for meals, a fresh pie, or simply reciprocal help down the road. Barter reduced cash outlays and created dense social ties. Knowing someone who could fix a furnace was both comforting and practical. On a practical level, this lowered household vulnerability. A broken dryer didn't mean a month of laundromat could replace a belt on Saturday. Financially, it spread risk across relationships rather than contracts and warranties.
Section 3. Everyday vignettes and emotional texture. Picture Mrs. Alvarez on her stoop, needle in hand, mending a child's coat while a boy waits to collect his bicycle. A father kneels beside a lawnmower with grease under his nails, showing the neighbor's son how to change the spark plug. A widow trades canned goods for help with her radio dial.
These small scenes weren't just transactions. They were rituals that reaffirmed belonging. Repair carried an emotional weight. Fixing an heirloom radio was in some ways fixing memory itself.
There's a tenderness to these memories. When things lasted, objects became part of family stories. A mended chair, a passed down tool, a radio tuned on a Sunday morning. Those are anchors. They saved money, yes, but they also created continuity. Repair wasn't simply economic thrift. It was a way of honoring what had been handed down, and a quiet resistance to a throwaway rhythm that would arrive later.
Reflection. What might we reclaim from the repair circle? First, resilience. When neighbors trade skills and time, small breakdowns don't become crises. Second, intentional consumption. Repair invites us to value durability and learn a little more about the things we own. Third, community. The economics of repair were social economics, trust, reciprocity, and obligation that helped families manage scarcity. That said, it's important not to romanticize hardship. Past generations also faced real material constraints, fewer safety nets, and harder labor. The point is not that life was easier, but that certain practices offered practical and emotional resources we can adapt today.
If you want a small takeaway, start with a toolbox and a neighbor. Learn one basic repair this month. Patch a bike tire, sew a button, or replace a light fixture, and trade that skill for something someone else does well. It stretches your household budget, yes, but it also creates a network of practical care. In a world of instant replacements, small repairs make time and attention part of the economy again.
Closing thoughts? Maybe what we miss most about those repair mornings isn't the tool chest or the spare parts, but the slowness, the space to learn together, and the quiet reassurance that someone nearby could help. In some ways, repair turned scarcity into solidarity. It was thrift that felt communal, not lonely. Dadgum, there's comfort in that image, isn't there? Subscribe to the show if you enjoy this kind of story, and consider sharing a repair memory yourself. I love hearing how small acts of mending shaped people's lives.
And that's where we'll leave our journey tonight. The past may look different through modern eyes, but sometimes, hidden inside old routines and forgotten traditions, we find pieces of ourselves we've been missing. Thank you for spending a little time traveling through history with me. Until next time, keep one foot in the past. Good night, and thanks for listening to Financial Time Machine.